Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 8 of Maybe Next Year. I'm your host, Corey Foss, here along with my co-host, Ethan Vober. And joining us tonight as our special guest is Braden Gardner. Braden, you want to give us a little intro on yourself?
Yeah, I'm Braden Gardner, born and raised in Winter, Winter High School alumni, longtime Vikings fan and Yankees fan, and fairweather LeBron fan.
All right. Just a little heads up here as we're getting going to remind you where to catch us at. As always, you can catch us on Anchor, and show usually goes up on Spotify shortly after we're finished here. But also Apple Podcasts is a place that we want to make sure that we emphasize too. If that's an easiest place for you to listen to, just go to Apple Podcasts, search Maybe Next Year, and scroll over a page, and there we are. And you can catch up not just with tonight's episode, but with all 7 of our previous episodes as well. So go ahead and do that. For tonight's show, we're going to mostly be talking about the Vikings and the game yesterday with the 49ers a little bit, maybe briefly about the last week's Saints game since we haven't been on the air since that game took place, and then some other NFL news and thoughts and reactions to the other games that have gone on. So that's kind of the outline for tonight. We're not really planning on covering any other areas of Minnesota sports, maybe a little bit about the Minnesota Gophers basketball team, but the brunt of it here will be about the Vikings. So anyways, about last night, yesterday's game, the Vikings lost 27-10 to the 49ers, and what really wasn't, after the first few possessions, a very good game for the Vikings or for any of their fans to watch. It was the 49ers' first playoff win in 6 years. Kirk Cousins, who we'll talk about a little bit tonight, had a pretty pedestrian game. He was 21-29 for 172 yards, had one touchdown to Stephon Diggs early in the game, and then a pretty ugly interception that played a big factor later in the game as it started to get out of control. Jimmy Garoppolo didn't do a whole lot, was just kind of a game manager, was 11 for 19 for 131 yards, had a touchdown on his pick as well. Probably one of the biggest stories, if not the biggest story of the game, was that Dalvin Cook only carried the ball 9 times for a total of 18 yards. And we'll discuss that a little bit. Tevin Coleman on the other end, 22 carries for 105 yards and 2 touchdowns for the 49ers, which was the difference, as they were able to run the ball and the Vikings were not. The Vikings only had 147 total yards to the 49ers, 308. And another important stat, the Vikings were 2-12 on third downs. They were not able to extend drives. They did not have a first down between the second and third quarters entirely. Only 7 total first downs, which is, I think they said, the third lowest ever in playoff history. Time of possession, 21 minutes for the Vikings to 38 for the 49ers. As I open this up or whatever, we'll get into a little bit more of the specifics, but I kind of wanted to get your guys' reactions right away here. And what were some of the things that kind of were going through your mind as you watched the game play out on TV there? How about you, Braden?
Well, obviously, it's a tough loss. It's hard to swallow. But something that really stood out to me is it was very similar to the Packers' loss on Monday night a few weeks back. Not a lot of first downs. The time of possession was not in our favor. Our defense was on the field for far too long. And you're going to run into problems like that. You're going to have – our defensive line is going to get banged up, and the 49ers wanted to run the ball just like the Packers wanted to run the ball. And it's tough. It's very, very tough when you have all the talent on the Vikings offense that you do. Obviously, there's some O-line problems. They're very athletic, but they get pushed around. But, yeah, I was very disappointed, obviously, but it was really hard to swallow,
What was probably the biggest problem, at least, that you saw that took place, and creating the blowout that it was?
I honestly thought that Zimmer had a very good defensive game plan. I mean, in the first couple of quarters, it showed that he knew exactly how to fluster Garoppolo. It kind of seemed like a very suspect game. Like you said, he was 13 for 19 or something like that, and he threw an interception, and there was a few other balls that could have been picked.
Mm-hmm.
He's a one-read guy, and we knew how to get him out of his element a little bit. The defensive game plan I thought was solid, but offensively, some of the play calling was very suspect. Screens when it's 3rd and 8, They knew they had to shut down Dalvin, and when they shut down our run game, we kind of were flustered. We didn't know what to do. We had no creativity, and that was the biggest problem, in my opinion. The offense had no creativity other than wanting to get the ball to Dalvin and get him going, and when we couldn't get him going, we were just lost. We didn't know what to do.
Ethan, what were some things that were points of emphasis for you as you were watching the game?
Exactly what we talked about in our last podcast a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that going into the playoffs, Cook is going to have to be the guy to get going early. And we talked about earlier, I didn't exactly get to sit down. We had some family stuff. I watched some of the game early on, but 9 for 18 is not going to win you a game with Dalvin Cook. We talked about Thielen and Diggs having to have big games as well, and Cousins having to do what he needs to do to show that if he's going to be the primetime guy. And it just didn't look like they did it. Thielen finally got involved in the game, but two catches for Diggs isn't going to work. The O-line statistically just didn't look like they did what they needed to do to help Cook out at all. And really, to me, it was a big game for both Garoppolo and Cousins on who they both had so much to prove. Garoppolo was unproven. And Cousins looking to finally be that guy in Minnesota, getting all this money. And it's kind of a who's going to show up type thing for both Cousins and Garoppolo. And like you said, Garoppolo didn't do a lot, but he won the game. And that's something that's going to hinder Cousins, hopefully until, you know, maybe next year. That was the biggest disappointment. As much as we raved, we knew Cook was going to have a big game, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I think the point of emphasis will be, at least when everybody looks at it and, you know, you follow things online and critiques and stuff like that, but the offensive line is probably the number one culprit, I think. People like to put blame on the quarterback, which is part of it's part of football. It always will be. But when a quarterback doesn't have time to, you know, to even drop back and make a decent read or a second read, it's nearly impossible. And he just didn't have enough time. You know, he was sacked 6 times, pressured way more than just the 6 times, but just didn't have a whole lot of – and I think, Brain, what you said was correct in that it reminded me a lot of that Packer game where he didn't have any time whatsoever in the pocket. And with Cook only rushing the ball 9 times for 18 yards, they didn't have to respect the play action. They didn't need to, which is the biggest part of the Vikings' offense. They have to have that. You know, early in the game, it looked like at least for the first, I don't know, 10 minutes, looked like it might be a game. Cousins hit Diggs on that 41 yards, I think, down the sidelines, burned Witherspoon. And that was it for his day. He was out after that. After giving up 5 touchdowns the last 3 weeks, and then Emmanuel Mosley came in and replaced him and did great. You know, he shut him down. I think Diggs only had 2 total catches. And, you know, I think the turning point in the whole game was when the 49ers had that after the interception where Sherman intercepted Cousins on the really poorly thrown ball. Thielen today took blame for it, but it was a poorly thrown ball. They ran the ball 8 times down and just marched down the field and scored a touchdown to make it 24-10. And that 14-point lead felt like it was about a 30-point lead at that given time. And after that, there really wasn't any recovery. So they just ran it down their throats. They didn't throw the ball once. And I think after Garoppolo's interception, the 49ers were more than happy to just run the ball and have him hand it off. So, you know, that was kind of the story of the game at that point. So I guess the question we've asked what kind of went wrong, but how much blame do you think Cousins should get for this, Ethan?
As a quarterback, you're gonna get a lot because you don't see running backs, receivers, D-line. They don't have a win-loss record. That's a stat for the quarterback. And I know it's a team game, but I think he's going to get probably more than what he deserves, but I think he's going to get what he needs. And I hope it fuels him for next year for you guys. As a Packers fan, I'm completely on record saying I wanted Minnesota to win this game. I wanted the playoffs to go through Green Bay. I don't want to see the Niners again lose by 50. I wanted Minnesota to win. I was heavily rooting for it. But it's just tough. You know, he's still unproven until he goes and proves himself and shows that he's going to be elite and worth $80 million. I don't know.
Brian, do you think that the Vikings, should be blame on the Vikings or criticism for the Vikings, or should we instead just be praising what's a really good 49ers team?
I think we should be blaming the Vikings. Yes, the 49ers are a very, very good football team, but I thought we matched up very well with them. I thought if we could get them on their haunches, that we could really disrupt Garoppolo. And we had very similar game plans. Kyle Shanahan and Mike Zimmer, they both wanted to get the ball running. They wanted to get the time of possession in their hands. But can you put this blame on Kirk? It's hard to say. He was 21 for 29, I think you said.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to say. He did have a few bad throws. He had a first down that probably should have been a better pass to Diggs. He had a couple of phantom sacks where he just felt pressure and kind of almost just curled up and fell down. It's hard. But I think a lot of the blame has to be put on the Vikings. I felt like this was a very winnable game. I might be a little biased because, yes, I'm a diehard Vikings fan, but it goes back to, you know, the Ravens in 2012 and the Giants in 2011. You know, they sneaked into the playoffs, but they were hitting at the right time. And I thought after that New Orleans game that we were going to be hitting and hitting our stride. But we did run into a brick wall, a buzzsaw. The 49ers defensive line is amazing. And they were healthy at the right time. But in my opinion, I think the offensive play calling was subpar. We needed to figure out ways to get the ball out of Kirk's hands faster. We needed to be a little more creative in our play calling, and we just weren't. And they were able to key on that. And like you said, with the screen game and the play action, they were able to just read it because we had no run game. And I think you got to be a little more creative. So I think a lot of the blame has to be on not just Kirk Cousins, but also on the coaching staff as well.
Well, you know, you kind of mentioned a little bit about the Saints game. We won't talk about it too much, even though we didn't get a really chance to prior to this week. But it was kind of a surreal deal in that it felt like another here we are again after a huge win like the Vikings had 2 years ago against the Saints and this year having a great overtime win and what was a lot of fun to watch. A week later, it's all gone. You know, a week later, it just completely nullified anything that any of those, you know, good feelings and momentum and things that were happening. It did. It felt like just a repeat of what happened 2 years ago. I guess, you know, the question about the 49ers a little bit, I guess we can talk about this in the next section, but do you think that they are the favorites now, especially with the Ravens out?
It's hard to say. You know, everyone has been criticizing Aaron Rodgers if the Packers end up winning this game. They've been criticizing him this whole season for he's underrated. He's not what he was. But I think with the game on the line, with a 2 minute, and if it's in the Packers' hands, he's going to turn it on and he's going to pick you apart. Now, that being said, if the 49ers have to shut down Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams in that Packers run game. They've been very successful this year. And if they can accomplish that, then it's going to be a very interesting game. I don't know where I swing. I'd probably want to say the Niners just because, you know, you're a Vikings fan. You never want to see Green Bay be successful. But it's a tough pick. I probably would swing more towards the Niners, though.
We're assuming at this point that the Packers are going to win, even though it's an 11-point game in the fourth quarter. I probably know what your hope is, Ethan, who's the favorite, but what do you realistically think?
It's about getting hot, and right now, is there a hotter team than Tennessee? It was amazing. I watched a little bit more of that game and what they were able to do to win overall, just on all aspects. It was insane, and, you know, I don't want to play San Francisco, but again, I'm not counting Aaron Rodgers out. But that game plan is essentially for the 49ers, if Green Bay advances, is going to be the exact same thing. Just like they did with Cook, they're going to have to shut down the run game, make Aaron Rodgers make plays. And Aaron Rodgers isn't what Aaron Rodgers was in 2010. He's not as agile. He showed that his passes aren't as accurate. He still does amazing things, but he doesn't do it as consistently as he has. I think it'll be a good game, but we've stated before that the NFC is just kind of a toss-up as far as who's going to go through it. And, you know, with Minnesota going to New Orleans and knocking them out in overtime, I sincerely thought they could have taken out San Francisco, and I didn't want to see them in Green Bay either, because that means they would have been probably the hottest team in the NFL. It's still right now just a toss-up. It has a March Madness feel to it that there's no Tom Brady out there. The Patriots aren't going to go win every game by 20 and hope someone, you know, blows a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be exciting, and I hope Green Bay can continue to stay in it so the NFL stays relevant to me, because after that it's Duke basketball. But I'm still putting my chips in on Green Bay, but if I was not a Green Bay fan, I was betting it's probably San Francisco.
Okay. There was obviously, you know, the question about whether it was more of the Vikings to blame or just a good 49ers team. There was obviously a huge gap, and anybody that watched the game saw that in a lot of different areas, the gap between where the Vikings are at and where the 49ers are at right now. So heading into the offseason, can the Vikings make enough moves to close that seemingly very large gap? Brahim?
Well, you know, obviously we're going to have to look at the O-line and try to fix the O-line. We do have two rookie guards that were inactive most of the seasons, Drew Samaya and Udo, who I think could play a major role this next season. But we need some tackles. We need some help for the outside pressure. Now, you want to say pieces, and obviously you get your pieces from the draft, but I am more curious to see how the front office handles the coaching situation. Obviously, we've already lost one coach, but I think Zimmer, I mean, he's under the gun here. He's getting scrutinized and he's getting looked at very closely. As a result, I think Spielman is too. You know, Wilf, his guys are Spielman and Zimmer, and he's publicly stated that those are his guys. So it's very interesting. I think we need some help on offense with the O-line. We have the rest of the pieces there. We have a great tight end. We have two great receivers. We have a phenomenal back. We need some help on the O-line, yes, but I'm more interested to see how they handle the coaching problems, because Zimmer, in my opinion, it just felt like he had far too much control of the offense, and the way he wants to run the offense is an old school bruiser, time of possession, run the ball kind of an offense. And if you take that away from the Vikings, then where are we at? It's kind of, he got exposed. He's gotten exposed several times this year on when the run game doesn't work. And I'm very interested to see how that pans out.
Well, the stat line on him is that he's, you know, 6 seasons, 3 playoff appearances, 2 division titles, 57, 38, and 1. But all that said, he only has 2 playoff wins. And both of them ended basically on, well, one was a miracle, and then the other one, you know, was an overtime win. So he hasn't really gotten it done in the postseason. And whether that will become a factor or not, I don't know. You know, getting beat bad in the playoffs is a little bit different than if you were to lose a close game. You know, everybody looks at it a little bit differently, and the criticism amplifies a little bit that way. So talking about moves, the before actual, you know, names of some of the free agents, do we think that Kirk Cousins deserves, and there's been talk about it, but do we think that Kirk Cousins has done enough now, you know, after this season, to deserve an extension?
I don't know. That's a great question. I'm happy I don't have to make that decision. I'm happy that decision really doesn't even affect me. Not that any NFL decisions affect me personally, but I mean, is he a safe bet? Yeah. Is it any worse? He's not out, you know, out. He's not a druggie. He's not out partying. You know, you're not, he's a safe guy in the aspects of that. Again, his emphasis is that he's just still unproven. And I don't know if you want to get caught in a contract extension with him when maybe a big name comes up and now, well, you're stuck 3 years with Cousins. I just don't know.
Has he hit his ceiling? I guess that's the next question about it, is that as high as a Kirk Cousins is going to take a team to the divisional series? I remember thinking that about Teddy Bridgewater a few years back. I think it was 15, probably the year that the wide left or whatever that they missed that the field goal against the Seahawks. But I remember thinking, you know, they were 10-6 at the time and played in the wild card. And I remember thinking, man, I don't know if Teddy Bridgewater can take a team a whole lot far. He can't put a team on his back. And he was going to need a lot more help than what he had. But is this Cousins' ceiling, or can he go higher? Can he take a team to a Super Bowl?
I'll be honest. I think he has more. I know it might sound crazy to any of you guys out there listening, because everyone, like we've all said, wants to put the blame on Cousins. But I think that Mike Zimmer and Stefanski turned him into a system quarterback. Now, he had a great season. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think he had 27 or 28 touchdowns and only 6 interceptions. But he played as a system quarterback this year, and it seemed like he played very tentative, very unconfident. And his last season in Washington, I mean, he was just a gunslinger. Now, granted, they had a losing team and, I mean, all the problems in Washington that was going on at the time and that are still going on. But we need to give him more opportunities. I think he has more. Now, do I think he is the answer? As to what Corey said with Teddy Bridgewater, two glove Teddy, how we all thought the same thing. You know, is this about what you expect? This is what you get. But I think there's more. I think Kirk is playing a very tentative, buying into the Mike Zimmer system. And I think he has so much more to offer, especially with the weapons that we have. We just need to find a creative way to give him opportunities to get the ball down the field.
And maybe that'll happen with a different coordinator. I don't know. You know, Zimmer definitely has, even though he's a defensive mind, you know, him last year with DeFilippo basically running him out because he wasn't running the ball enough, and him trying to take control out of the team that way as well. I don't think any offense that he's at the head of is going to be that dynamic, especially given all the tools that they have around him with, you know, Cousins. But all right, so some of the names that come up, first, the free agent list is long when it comes to secondary for the Vikings. There's going to be some really different looking secondary next year. Anthony Harris, who should be their top priority, is a free agent. Trey Waynes, Mackenzie Alexander, Jayron Kearse, and Andrew Sandeo, all ones that played, you know, the large chunk of a time in the secondary, are all free agents. And it's important to note, when looking at the Vikings and their offseason move, they have less cap space than any other team in the NFL. They were negative $4 million in cap space. You know, so either unless some things get rearranged or some contracts are dropped, like Xavier Rhodes, who I'm assuming will be dropped, whether Everson Griffin, you know, will look at a different contract structure. Maybe if you can restructure Cousins a little bit, maybe not so front-loaded. But there's going to be some major things to figure out there. And other free agent names, including, you know, Everson Griffin, I think probably this time last year we would have been fine letting him go. But he came back and had a good year. Dan Bailey, who had a good, you know, a very un-Viking kicker-like season. He was pretty steady. Britton Colquitt, who did a nice job punting, didn't have a touchback until the last game. And then CJ Ham, who we've mentioned a couple times, just being an unsung hero kind of guy in the lineup. Those are some important names. So of those names, you know, who would you like to see back? Who do you think the Vikings need to make a priority of?
I think you got to make a priority of Emerson Griffin. He's just a name that, like you said, he's only gotten better. He had a down year, and I think you're going to have to buy into him. If you can restructure Cousins, I think you can, because I think Braden was right. I think you could win with him, but you're going to have to win with the middle of the pack type of guy. And to me, you can win with middle of the road guys like that, but you're going to have to surround them with the talent that's needed. And to do that, you're going to have the money to put names around him. But that started off with that $80 million contract that I like to mention to you guys. So I think that's going to be the first one that's going to have to get bought into is Griffin.
What names do you think need to really be dealt with?
I'm going to go for Anthony Harris. I mean, he was an X factor. I know after we got bumped out of the playoffs 2 years ago and we were going to lose Sandejo and we kind of were wondering about that position. Anthony Harris really stepped up. He was in a contract year this year, and he had a great year. I think he ended the year with 6 interceptions.
He tied for the league lead, yeah.
And, you know, he got another one against the Saints. And, you know, he's a very, very good safety. He plays plays a position very well. Now, as far as some of our other guys, obviously Rhodes, you want to see that contract go away. You want to see that guy go away. Mackenzie Alexander, I would be interested to see what he would do if he would take a smaller contract to stay a Viking. I do like Mackenzie. I'm a big Mackenzie fan. Trey Wayans is tough, you know. He's a Mike Zimmer guy. He was Mike Zimmer's pick.
He's schizophrenic, isn't he?
He has a lot of problems. I mean, if you get beat, he's gonna pull you down and we're gonna get a flag. Everson Griffin, you know, he's getting up there. I think this was his 10th year in the league. And you know, it would be interesting to see what they do with that. Also, like going back to the Kirk Cousins problem, you know, do you extend him? Do you, like, he's got 1 year to prove it. So that will also be interesting to see how maybe they can restructure that. Like Corey said, it's a front-loaded contract. You know, he's getting paid a lot of money. But I don't know. My top priority as of right now is Anthony Harris. The guy is a very, very good safety. He sees the ball very well. And he plays into Mike Zimmer's defense. He played a huge role in Mike Zimmer's defense this whole year.
The last question I'll ask then here before we hit our break is, I don't think anybody thinks Sean Mannion would be the answer should something happen to Kirk Cousins or, you know, down the line, maybe when Cousins' time is up here. So do you think the Vikings, who are going to be not in the middle, but a little towards the rear of the draft order, do you think that they should draft a quarterback and have that quarterback said spend 2-3 years learning behind Cousins?
I do. I was talking with a friend about this the other day, and if there's a quarterback, you know, obviously we're going to miss Burrow and Tua, but if a Jalen Hurts or a Herbert from Oregon is there at the end of the first, it would be an awesome pick to take one of those guys. Have them learn the playbook, have them learn the offense, have them take first team reps. And then also you have them there if Kirk does go down. We've been fortunate enough to have little to no injuries with our skill positions on offense. But, you know, I think it's a great idea.
Personally, I'm a big fan of Georgia's quarterback, Jake Fromm. I think he'd be someone that maybe would be right in the area of the Vikings draft pick, and if not, someone that they could probably not give up too much to reach to grab him. And I think he's going to be a good guy system wise that he could sit back. You're not going to expect a whole lot from him. I don't personally think from watching him, he's going to be the guy that's going to jump into any system, and he can prove me wrong and win a bunch of games. I think that would be my suggestion, is see. And I haven't looked in the draft rankings where the quarterbacks are ranked at and everything. But I think he'd be a good guy to sit back 1-2 years and learn. And, you know, at that point, you know whether he's going to be your backup guy, if he's going to be a guy that you can maybe trade bait and get something off of, or if he's going to be someone that could be a possible future for Minnesota.
All right, we're about to hit that time limit here for the first section. So we'll come back, talk about our other NFL news, and then also about Kevin Stefanski taking the Browns head coaching job today. Welcome back to Maybe Next Year, episode 8. For our second segment here, we're going to do a little bit of NFL news and notes. But we'll start it off with a little bit of Vikings news here today. As the news came across the wire that Kevin Stefanski, the offensive coordinator, has taken the job as the Browns head coach. Stefanski's 37. He's been with the Vikings since 1999. He's been with the Vikings for 13 years, I should say. This year the Vikings offense was eighth in scoring at 25 points. I don't want to say average, but, made some big strides from last year. He was actually up for the job last year when they ended up hiring Freddie Kitchens, but he steps into a very tumultuous setting. I don't know if I necessarily envy him. The Browns have had 12 coaches since they came back in 1999, five since 2012. They have a 17-year playoff drought and have not won the division since 1989, back before they left to go to Baltimore. He beat out the likes of Josh McDaniels and Robert Saleh, which I thought was kind of interesting, the 49ers defensive coordinator, which makes you think that they kind of made up their mind already prior to yesterday's game who they were going to go with, because Saleh's defense looked a heck of a lot better than Stefanski's offense did. He does have a lot of toys, though, now to work with. He's very good, known for being very good with quarterbacks. He has one that needs a lot of help in Baker Mayfield right now after kind of a crummy year. It has Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, and the always fun Odell Beckham Jr. So his offense, I think that's probably why they went with an offensive mind, just knowing what they do have and what they could develop with a good coach. And so now on the flip side, that means the Vikings are now looking for their fifth offensive coordinator in 5 years. They went from Norv Turner, who kind of in a really weird way quit in the middle of the year, and then Pat Shurmur, who then left to go to take the head coaching job in New York, and then DeFilippo, which was an absolute gong show. He was supposed to be the next big thing, and things really went sideways on him, and he was out. So fifth offensive coordinator in 5 years. I guess, what did you think, Ethan, of the Browns move to snatch him up? Do you think it was a good move on their parts, and do you see it working out for him in Cleveland?
I don't know if I believe anybody can make that circus go anywhere. I think there's just too many divas going on with Mayfield and Odell. I just hope they don't go and sign Antonio Brown to completely make that run around. I think he can have success. There's no reason talent-wise that Cleveland wasn't relevant towards the end of the year. He, like you said, kind of middle of the road, 24 points average in Minnesota, and that was with Cook hurt quite a bit. And with Kirk Cousins, who, is maybe not quite the athlete Mayfield is and maybe not the potential Mayfield is, but it's still good nonetheless. I think there's a lot of talent there, and I think if somebody can turn that around and just make it about football and have them do their jobs, I think he could have quite a bit of success in Cleveland. I think they can be relevant in the AFC, and there's no reason why they can't be.
Do you think this is going to have a big negative impact on the Vikings?
I do. I think it exposes the coaching staff for being a very – Mike Zimmer has his hands in everything, and I think Stefanski taking over the Browns is a very solid move by them. He's going to be able to think for himself. He's going to be able to make his own playbook. And they wanted an offensive mind, and they got it. The guy's been a coach for 13 years, and he's seen a lot. And I think it was a good move. Now, time will tell, because everyone and their dog thought that Freddie Kitchens was the right move as well. But it's hard to say. I think he'll be good. I think he was a good offensive mind. I actually think Spielman and Zimmer made the right decision to promote him when we got rid of DeFilippo. DeFilippo was trying to be too creative. Now, creativity in the offense is an integral part. Look at some of these offenses across the league that have less talent wise across the board than the Vikings, and they still managed to get it done. Patriots, for example, is a big one with Josh McDaniels' mind. But I think it has a, like you said, a negative effect on the Vikings. I think Zimmer had his hands in the offense, like he had too much control. And it just even goes back to as far as like Kubiak, he said it was the greatest hire he's made in his coaching career. But I don't even know if Kubiak had as much influence on Stefanski. I think Zimmer had more, so we'll see. I think it has more of a negative effect on the Vikings than it does a negative effect on the Browns. I think it's a good fit. I'm very interested to see how he does over there.
It'll be interesting to see, too, who the Vikings take a serious look at for replacing him. I think that immediately the name that came up was Shurmur again, just because things went really well when he was here and, you know, 2 years ago going to the NFC title game. But he then just recently, within the last hour or two, it was announced that he is taking over the Broncos offensive coordinator job. So that leaves really probably the favorite then is Clint Kubiak, who is Gary's son, who is a quarterback coach right now. Some of the things I read, people spoke very highly of him and whether that would be an option just to move him up. And, you know, how much change that would create just being, you know, Gary's son and Gary having such an impact on the offense already as the assistant offensive coordinator. So, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see what direction they do decide to go. Any thoughts?
You know what I'm doing right now. I'm tied up in the Green Bay game. I don't have time to be thinking about this. You know, I don't know. I really don't. I don't. I have no thoughts.
All right. So the other NFL things I guess to talk about is maybe what has gone on so far this weekend outside of the Vikings and 49ers. A big surprise yesterday with the Titans and the Ravens game. I think not anybody outside of Tennessee really saw that taking place. With the Titans beating the Ravens 28-12, and the stats of the game are just wacky. They're very odd. You know, the winning quarterback Tannehill was 7-for-14 for 88 yards, and 45 of them came on one pass. So he did about as close to nothing as you can do it and end up winning by that score is a little bit odd. But then you look at Derrick Henry, and he had 30 carries for 195 yards, and that was really the story of it, their control over the ball there, because Lamar Jackson was Lamar Jackson, at least in the second half there. He was 31-for-59 times throwing the ball. That's
insane.
That's a lot. For 365, had one touchdown, two interceptions, but he also ran for 143 yards. So he did the most that he could do. You know, they had 530 yards of offense compared to the Titans 300, and they lost 28-12. Turnovers were a part of it, obviously. The Ravens had three, the Titans didn't have any. But I guess the question then that I would ask is that do the Titans have a legitimate shot now, even after knocking off the Patriots and now the Ravens?
I think so. With the run game, and I don't know, it might just be hyped up with Henry as crazy good of a game as he had. And, you know, that Titans team isn't – we thought the AFC was wrapped up. You know, I think everybody had the Ravens, Chiefs going into this. We thought the NFC was going to be the toss-up. The Titans essentially are doing what the Vikings thought everyone thought that the Vikings were going to be able to do. But I think, yeah, right now they're one game away. Essentially, if you can contain the Chiefs, and the Texans had it done. I think they had a 24-point lead.
24-0.
And they let him come back. Obviously ran with Mahomes, but Jackson's very comparable, and we can talk about that game here in a little bit. But I think Tannehill's going to step up against the Chiefs. Derrick Henry is going to have an equivalent game to what he just did, which is running people over. He's a very large human being. But I think they could put up points against the Chiefs, who gave up 31. So, I think they have a very good shot at doing it, especially when their defense held the Ravens to 12 points. I wouldn't count the Titans out at all. But I, again, won't be surprised to see the Chiefs beat them by 50 either. But they do have a good shot.
What are your thoughts on that game?
I am on the Titans bandwagon. I'm riding the train. I'm a huge running back guy. You know, I played running back in high school, so they always have a soft spot. Obviously, Derrick Henry is a freak. 6'3", 240, ran a 4.5 40 in the NFL combine when he ended up getting drafted. But, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's their first two playoff games. If you look at the stats, they are so one-sided and in favor of the opposing team that you would think, my God, and you look at the box score and you're like, wow, the Titans won that game. But Mike Vrabel, I mean, he is a player's coach. He has those guys jacked up. Everyone thought their defense was suspect, but he has them flying around and hitting people, and they're putting pressure on the quarterback. You know, Lamar Jackson had such crazy stats yesterday, over 300 yards passing, over 100 yards rushing, but he got them for two interceptions and a fumble. And Ryan Tannehill was the exact opposite. In his two playoff games, he has a total of 160 yards passing.
That's insane.
Two playoff games, 160 yard passings, and I don't even know if he's over 30 completions. I mean,
it's, oh, there's no way. He only had 7 yesterday.
That's just insane. But I think the Titans, they're jacked up. They're hot, as Ethan said. They want it. They want it very bad, and I could see them taking the Chiefs on. The Chiefs' run defense is suspect. Obviously, you run into Patrick Mahomes and all of his weapons and what he can do. But if they can slow that passing attack down, I think the Titans have a very good shot at winning.
So that's the other game then today that took place, the Chiefs and the Texans, with the Chiefs winning in an absolutely wild game, 51-31. The Texans had a 24-0 lead in the second quarter. And a lot of it had to do with turnovers. There was a muff punt, I believe, but from that point on, the Chiefs scored 6 touchdowns in a row in the second and third quarter. Mahomes was 23 of 35 for 321 and 5 touchdowns. You know, so that's about as flipped of a game as you can get between quarters. You know, so the Chiefs are rolling now on offense. The Titans are seemingly rolling on defense. Who do you like in that matchup?
If the Titans can play like they did, forcing turnovers, I think Mahomes isn't as good as a quarterback, and he isn't as athletic as Jackson is. And I think if they can contain Mahomes, I think they could win this game. But at the same flip of the coin, Mahomes, they put up 51 points. They're gonna have to be able to withstand that storm that is Kansas City. Kansas City is going to score points. The Titans aren't going to hold Kansas City to 12 points. But I'm still taking the Chiefs, but I wouldn't be scared to say that this is going to be a 35-31 victory or something close. I just don't see Tannehill leading these guys through Kansas City. I can't see him doing that.
Who's your AFC pick?
I'm going to pick the Titans as well. You know, it's like Ethan said, there's the Kansas City offense is amazing in all aspects. And Andy Reid has he's fine-tuned every part of Patrick Mahomes' game to play the quarterback position the way that he has played it. You know, I mean, today he was 28 for 35, 321 yards and 5 touchdowns. I mean, that's just unreal. But the weapons that he has, and Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, he's got Mecole Hardman, who I think ran just a few seconds slower than Tyreek Hill in the combine. He's got a lot of speed, but if the Titans can find a way to control the clock and to get some of those crazy turnovers, you know, maybe they get a muffed punt, maybe they get a few interceptions. I think with their offensive line playing the way they are, you know, the Titans offensive line is getting after people. They're moving bodies. And if Derrick Henry can get rolling, you know, he's going to have 30 carries, maybe 35. And if they can get him going and Tannehill can just manage to move the chains, I think the Titans have a scary good shot against a freak of nature in the Kansas City Chiefs offense. I think they have a very good shot. I'm rooting for the Titans.
I might root for the Titans, but there's no way I'm going to pick them. I think the Chiefs roll after watching seeing the second half there. And, the Titans have been working on borrowed time with the getting killed in the stat department. Sooner or later, that's going to catch up. And playing three games in 3 weeks, all on the road, that's hard to do for anybody. You know, we thought that we were going to ask that question about the Vikings and whether that played a huge factor, mm-hmm. that they only had 6 days to prepare, where the 49ers had 2 weeks. So that's fine for that. It looks like the Packers are going to win here.
Yeah, I believe they just call stands. They got a first down, minute 48, Seahawks with one timeout. So
it's over.
Essentially run the timeout here.
All right, so that gives us then the last prediction here for the NFC side. Packers and 49ers. Braden, who you got?
I'm going to take the 49ers by 3. I think it's going to be a very, very close game. I think they both have similar game plans, and I think it's all going to depend on Aaron Rodgers. If they can contain the run game and put all of the pressure on Aaron, I think the 49ers have a very good shot. I'm taking the 49ers by 3.
I got the 49ers, but I got them by 14. I think it's going to be – I think at home in the way that they're playing, and the Packers, they're fighting for their life here tonight too, but it looks like it's going to work out for them. But I just, after watching the way the 49ers play, I think that they're just they're tough right now. They're going to be tough to beat at home.
Both predictions better than like the 50-point loss we suffered earlier in the season. I think it'll be a close game. I hate to say it. I die a little bit inside, but I think San Francisco is going to be just too good and too hot to beat. And I think Garoppolo is going to get his first chance in the Super Bowl. I think the key is you're going to have to shut down Aaron Jones, and you're going to have to make Rodgers scramble for his life. Tonight, Green Bay did it without Bulaga, who was out with an illness. Hopefully, I know there's been a lot of reports that a lot of that Packer locker room is sick. I hope they can get over that. I hope they can have a healthy showing. But I just don't know if Green Bay, it ain't me, can put up enough points to compete with San Francisco. I think it's going to be probably a 7-point game, and San Francisco is going to roll to play the Chiefs.
All right. I think we'll just throw it into this section as well, the college football part of it, since we have a few minutes here. The LSU-Clemson, we'll just get you guys' predictions for the college football championship game. My prediction, even though I think it's basically a home game for LSU playing in New Orleans, and the crowd is going to be heavily in their favor. And I think, they're favored by 5.5 points right now. But I'm going to go. I went with Clemson before the playoffs started. I'm going to stay with them for a couple different reasons. One is because Clemson has the number one pass defense in the country. And I think that if somebody's going to be able to slow down Joe Burrow, it has to be them. Clemson's offense is very balanced. They have experience, obviously, winning the national title next year. Trevor Lawrence has, after maybe a little bit of a slower start this year, is rolling again after the second half he had against Ohio State as well. LSU does defend the pass well, not nearly as well as Clemson, but their run defense is pretty middle of the road. So I have Clemson winning 38-31. What do you got?
I think you're right. It's gonna be a very heavily favored offensive game. I'm a huge LSU guy. I'm pulling for them. I wouldn't say I'm a diehard fan, but I really like Coach O. The guy is freaking all time. His interviews are amazing. he's a great players coach. He gets his guys fired up. But on the same token, Dabo Sweeney, he's also a very good players coach. Everyone in my home and everyone that I talked to said Ohio State by 20. And I was obviously heavily on Ohio State's side, but Clemson shocked me. And, they kind of had a lull at the beginning of the season. Everyone was kind of like, oh, is it, will they, won't they? Are they the same team that they were last year? And then the second half of the season, they just were rolling. They were hot. Trevor Lawrence hasn't lost in his college career. I think he's a better quarterback overall
than Burrow.
I think he's a freak. You know, he busted that run off against Ohio State for the 60-yard touchdown, and he looked like a thoroughbred. I mean,
Who do you have winning?
I have LSU winning. You have it at 38-31. I'm going to go pretty similar. I'm going to say 42-37. It's going to be a high-scoring game, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with both of you. Both coaches, very personable. Probably my favorite coaches in the nation as far as getting to listen to them. Clemson embraced the underdog mentality when they really got no respect in the rankings all year. And I know, Foss, you've talked to me about it a little bit, that you got to, you know, the committee is all about this year. It's not what you did last year. It's not who you are before this. It's all about 2019. And I just don't agree with it, as sure the rankings can do that. But Clemson really loves that them and the ACC as a whole really got no respect. And they've embraced it, and Dabo just loves it. And I think they're going to come out 14-point win. It's going to be high scoring, probably 35-21 if I had to throw a number out there. A great showing against Ohio State. Lawrence is a beast. I think he's just going to take control of the game. They're going to go back-to-back. You can't root against defending national champions out of the ACC.
All right, so one LSU, two Clemson. It'll be interesting. It'll be a good game. I think either way, it's going to be a good game. So,
great game.
All right, that wraps us up for our NFL and college news. And we'll come on back with kind of our wrap-up and a little bit about the Gopher basketball team. Welcome back to episode 8. Our last section here tonight, we're going to just talk briefly about the Gopher basketball teams. They had a big win here tonight. And whether or not we think this is a sign of better things to come. And then we'll finish up with our bold predictions. So we've really only talked about the Gopher basketball one other time in this podcast, and it was when they had that huge win over, I think Ohio State was number 4 at the time at home, and put it to them pretty good. They've had a back and forth kind of run through the Big Ten since, but today they beat number 19 Michigan at home 75-67. Pushes their record to 9-7, which isn't overly impressive when you're thinking about, you know, March coming around when it does come around and looking at that. But they are 3-3 in the Big Ten. And I think we've seen over the last few years, if you can get through the juggernaut that is the Big Ten, you know, 3-4 games, maybe over 500, you're probably going to be in. You know, last week, Dave had the prediction that the Gophers were going to beat one of the two Michigan teams, either State or Michigan, and he was right. We haven't had a lot of bold predictions that have been right, but that was one of them. So, I guess, you know, looking at where they're at now, how they've gone through the Big Ten, the early part of the schedule yet, do you think then that this is a team that could, come March, be competing for a spot?
They can compete, absolutely. I think they have a shot. They're going to have to win a lot more kind of your middle of the conference games. You know, your trademark wins when it comes to March and you're on the bubble, and the Michigan win might not be as big as your losses to lower teams. I mean, they've played good teams. They played Butler. They've beat a lot of the middle road teams, but – it wasn't that long ago. They just lost to FIU, who is a college basketball irrelevancy. They're really a college sports irrelevancy.
They didn't lose to them.
Oh, no, you're right. I can't read.
I said they didn't lose to FIU.
Okay, well, then that makes my point null. But either way, I think they still have work to do, and it's going to obviously have to start now that the Big Ten's coming up. They got – ranked Penn State team on Wednesday. Three of their next four teams
That's
coming
wild,
up.
Wild, a ranked Penn State team.
Penn State, then they go to Rutgers, then they go back to Ohio State, and then they host again Michigan State. Three of them ranked. So, you know, you're looking at, you want to walk away with at least one ranked win, if not two, and, you know, take care of your Rutgers, your Illinois, your teams like that, to stay relevant and in the hunt, and hope that when conference tournament time comes that you're not going to have to win the entire Big Ten to get your bid. You want that auto bid.
The Big Ten is an interesting conference this year. Outside of Michigan State, there's not anybody that terrifies you. You know, I think Ohio State's dropped to number 11 now. It's a good conference. It's going to, because it is kind of middle loaded, it's going to be hard to roll through it, you know, because on most nights you're going to get somebody that, you know, is going to be there, going to be a decent team. So I think to get the committee to really look at you, you're going to have to win. You know, they have two big wins now against ranked opponents. If they can get, you know, a couple more here out of the next three, I think they might be sitting all right. It's a long ways to go, a long ways left, but you're going to need some signature wins along the way.
Yeah, you know, I'm not as knowledgeable about college basketball, really. I only start diving into it in March. But I think, like, to what Corey said, you know, the juggernaut of the Big Ten always has and always will be a tough conference. And if they want a shot, they need to get some signature wins in the Big Ten conference. They just got one over Michigan. And I don't know, you know, if they can get some of these bigger conference wins, I think it would be crazy to not look at them as an auto bid. Or if you do well in the Big Ten tournament, you know, it's hard to say. Minnesota sports are so crazy. You know, you go back to the Minnesota football team where they were almost in the top four towards the end of the year for playoff contention. And then you go to basketball season and they just got a huge win over Michigan. You know, Minnesota sports are very good at riding big wins, and it'll be interesting to see how they come here. You know, it's January and they have a couple more months of basketball. If they can keep riding this win streak, you know, we'll see what happens.
All right. So I guess we'll finish up then kind of with our bold predictions. I'll wait for you guys, cause I think my bold prediction is going to have to do with the Gopher basketball team here. Ethan, what do you got for this week?
Oh,
is it Timberwolves related?
They keep burning me. It's hard. I was going to go a little bit into the Minnesota basketball team as well. I don't know what you were going to go into. My bold prediction is they're going to go 2-0 against Ohio State. They're going to beat them on the road and continue to stay relevant in the Big Ten. That's the 23rd. I think they'll beat Ohio State twice, which I don't think has happened in quite some time. I haven't put my numbers or haven't done my research, but back-to-back wins to Iowa State, ranked Ohio State.
Yeah, that's probably a good one. I'm going to have to go. I think if Minnesota, my bold prediction for the week is that they win this whole week. They go undefeated this week and they stay relevant. They stay hot.
So they have Penn State on Wednesday at home, number 20 Penn State. And then they have Rutgers at Rutgers Sunday. So you have them going 2-0 and you have them beating Ohio State the following week?
Yep.
I'm going to have them going 1-1 this week. And I'm actually going to have them beating Penn State and losing to Rutgers, which I guess qualifies as a bold prediction because I think it's probably most people think it'd be the other way around. But that's what I have for the week. So that's got to be a first, all three Gopher basketball.
Straight Minnesota basketball. Legion bold picks.
All right. That'll wrap us up for tonight. Brayden, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Just a reminder, be sure to check us out, Twitter and Facebook pages. Come and listen on. You can listen on Spotify. That'll be up really quick. And then also Apple Podcasts, if that's what's easiest for you there. And then it goes up originally on Anchor. So we're planning probably a show next Sunday-ish. We kind of have to wait and see what the Packer game, when that falls on. And maybe wait till Monday so we can talk about both of those two games. But that's kind of the timeline that we're looking at for what's coming up for episode 9. So thanks a lot for joining us. We'll be right back.